don't look, this is now my mirror. I do apologise. That's a terrible sight to see.
Yeah.
No pictures today, please, by
That's
request.
lovely. And you're going to start, yeah, you're going to organise your mic and things now you've joined us so we can hear you
Yeah.
banging around.
Matt!
Useful for either.
Dave.
I've also used it several times to unlock and lock the car.
What's this unprofessional behaviour?
What's
got
happening?
me?
Things that are really good about the
David,
iPhone.
What's going on?
I've got something playing,
yeah, we
a video from YouTube, and I can't find out where it is. I don't know. Right, just let me try and close this down to try and get rid of it. I don't know.
Hello. Until we fix this technical error, here is Jacob Rees-Mogg and his swing quartet.
Well, who's doing this one?
I think it should be you, David, actually.
No, I think Mark said...
You do it, you're lazy.
I don't even know what the episode's called.
David Goodall, over to you.
Right, well, welcome everybody to Three Down, One Across. This is episode 12, and it is called Access Nay Areas.
Access nay areas.
Aye, access nay areas. We're looking at accessibility, not just in terms of access for disabled people, but also getting into places you shouldn't get into, getting barred for places you shouldn't have been barred for, getting into things.
All right, okay.
We can discuss that, getting into pubs when you're underage. I remember going to a place, Napoleon's, and that was a terrible turn of events. Terrible.
Oh, that's a story you've told before on the podcast.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
That's a warning sign.
I'll tell you.
It's going to be a very short episode this week.
Well, I was thinking the other day, my God, I've forgotten. We need to go back and listen. But I'll tell you another tale of getting in Mac the Jack Russell.
That's your assistant's dog, yeah?
We were out the kids in the park, it started pouring with rain, and they said, Mum, please can we go to the pictures? I says, we can't go to the pictures, darling, we've got Mac. So I put Mac in a big bag, shopper bags everybody carries in their boot, took him into the pictures. As we're walking in, somebody went, you know you've got a Jack Russell in your bag? And I went, no. I says, oh, here, Mac. He went, just get in, there's nip down, doesn't matter.
Mark, did you go to this? Would you like
to the
share
cinema
that in, with the group?
In Paisley, the big showcase cinema, quiet at night time. I can't remember the movies now, but wasn't a lot of folk in. But I knew a movie I wanted to see was starting across the way. So it's 10 minutes left of disaster movie. I get the idea. I looks about and I goes out and he saw the big long corridors that leads into the kind of hub. Nobody there. That I'm just going to go in to the cinema because nobody's going to notice me. Goes in, five people in, sits down. I'm sitting there 5 minutes. A guy comes in with a fluorescent jacket and he passes and he looks at me. I looks at him and he goes out the door at the bottom. That's fine. Movie starts. 10 minutes later, door opens and there he is again with two people with him. He says, can I see your ticket? And I said, sorry, is it a ticket? If you don't have a ticket, you need to leave.
Mark, had you done over 60 episodes of television at this point and you were a well-known face?
But the worst part of it was, I went, I got up and I walked out and there's a huge long walk we're doing with these guys behind me. And I walked all the way down and everybody's standing behind the popcorn and all that. Bye, cheer on the best. Cheers now.
Tight-fisted Tam thrown in the cinema. Oh, that's shameful.
Now, I can't name any names of people involved or the hotel involved. It was pre-internet, so suffice it to say, I started writing to this hotel, a very, very well-known hotel, and I started writing a series of short letters talking about looking for somewhere to practice golf in the off-season. I was interested in their hotel, and I was an Italian professional golfer. It took about 2.5-3 months, but I ended up with just to look the place over myself and four friends who were under strict instructions not to say a word, because we're meant to be Italian. We all got wined and dined up at this golf hotel.
So I'm going there. hotel.
No idea. I have no idea which hotel.
Nailed it.
What about you, Paul Riley?
On this week's topic, which I suppose we should get round to at some point, I was at the Fairmont Hotel in St Andrews, and the fella who does the meet and greet, he says, "You and me have got something in common." And I was like, "Oh, I really?" And this has just arrived. What's that? He said, "I've got one leg as well." He's in his kilt, and I'm like, "Oh, I can't see that." He went, no, he said, "Because my sock's so far up, you can't see my prosthetic leg." And I was like, "Oh, wow. What do you think of my limp? What do you think of it?" And he says, "It's absolutely bang on." And then over the course of the 2 days, the two of you started blathering away. He was a lovely, lovely man. But apparently, I had the limp right down to a T, according to him. So there you go.
I'm sure you put a lot of research into it.
Dedication.
It was the night before, Coxie.
I know.
Well, I remember, it's a great story. And it is about getting in, I guess. It was Sanjeev Kohli told me, and it was at the airport. And so he was going through security, and this security guard came up and grabbed him by the arm and went, "Got him! Found him! Found him, everybody! I've found him!" Now, Sanjeev, as an Asian man going through security in an airport, some security guy shouts, "I've found him." Everybody backed away, and then he ruffled Sanjeev's head and he went, "Hey, hey, where's Wally?" Sanjeev was in a stripy t-shirt, jeans, and his big black glasses. And he said he nearly shat himself.
It was a Baldy Bane thing. I directed, I used the term loosely, a play, and I went out to the school to watch it. Went in, saw the cast, and then I'd remembered I'd left something in my car, so went out to the car park, and this teacher followed me out. "Excuse me." "Uh-huh." "Excuse me. Can I help you? I'm just in it." And he wouldn't let me speak. He went, "What are you doing here? I'm just in it. What are you doing in this school? You've got no right to be in this school." And I went, "I'm in with a play." And his face kind of changed. He went, "A play? Are you in a play?" I went, no, I'm with Baldy Bane. "Did you come here a few years ago and play a paedophile?" He said, "I saw your face and my heart stopped." Now, the follow-up to this is my delightful son who lives in Florida.
G'day, Florida.
Who was over for a wee holiday, and we were in a coffee shop in Dundee. He's got a voice like a foghorn. There was that natural lull around you. I went, "So, Dad, mind that time, was it in Dundee? You were a paedophile." We say, "Did you act as a..." Anyway, that was that.
You forget one word.
Oh.
Someone's knocking on the door. Someone we've been waiting for. We haven't got a bell, so it's really just as well that I'm knocking on the door.
Speaking of getting in, I think that we can welcome in Eoin Duncan.
Hello, everybody.
Eoin Duncan.
You're not getting in.
Oh, that's fine.
I've known Eoin since she was 2 years of age.
That's right.
Doing a Baldy Bane show with her mum and dad.
Baldy Bane, you say? Is that a theatre company or something?
Yep. Tell us about that, Eoin.
Well, Baldy Bane is a theatre and education company. We run from the south side of Glasgow. Next year, we're going to be celebrating 30 years in the industry. If you've gone to school in Scotland in the last 30 years, you have probably had a performance from Baldy Bane at some point.
If it involves somebody standing on the stage laughing and crying at the same time, then you've seen Jane McCarry.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know, so one of the stories that always...
I need to stand up. I've got a bee in the conservatory. I need to go cut the
guitar.
Just carry on.
I have a great example of Jane laughing and crying. We were doing the panto at the King's, and I went into the dressing room, and Jane was crying. And I was genuinely concerned. I said, "Jane, what's up with you?" She says, "I can't stop laughing on stage." I did Ulysses, and Stevie Cooper had to pretend to be a cat. He stuck the feather through and just wiggled it like a cat's tail, and he made a meow noise, right? But one night he went, meow, like that. And that set me off. But I had to go on stage next, and I had to, it was in Latin. Boy, could I keep that together? Absolutely not. It was just terrible, bad behaviour.
I find it very open of you and refreshing, and so unusual that anyone here, Jane, Mark, or you, would ever be involved in anything that was untoward on stage. I mean,
no,
it's just,
no.
It's great of you to open up to that.
Don't
rarity.
Mess about with that.
David, as soon as you hear beginners,
you start behaving like a beginner.
As soon as you hear beginners, you get out of your car, put your phone away.
Jane, remember the time you took your car to the King's and then got the bus back?
Oh, forgot that's you'd had the right. car. Forgot I'd taken the car. Got a ticket the next day. Oh,
There was one tour, I think, was it McGregor's Treasure? Or there was a treasure chest in it. At the end of the show, it gets poured out across the stage and it's full of gold coins. So the props that we were using was chocolate coins and gold foil. They would pour it out and it would cascade across the stage. It looked amazing. Progressively throughout the tour, Jane would eat more and more of these chocolate coins until the last day of the tour when they poured it out and just this gold foil would just flutter down at the stage and Jane would be there laughing, ho, ho, ho.
Shameful. Oh, it's a disgrace. Free grub.
So what's the situation, the story? You're talking about accessibility. Tell us your tale, Aileen.
Well, I've been a wheelchair user since 2012. I have a form of muscular dystrophy. It's called limb-girdle muscular dystrophy, and it causes weakness in the limbs, but it can also affect the heart, the respiratory muscles. And over time, your muscles start to degrade. I was 12 when I was diagnosed. I could walk up until about the age of 21, 22. I fell and I broke my femur one night. I fell on my arse and broke my leg. That's what happened. And the doctors that I saw at the time were obviously ortho specialists and they didn't really know much about my condition. The advice was to go on bed rest. So I was off my feet for about 3 months. And that's not the advice that should have been given to somebody with muscular dystrophy. So during that time, my muscles just wasted away. And at that point, I had to start using a wheelchair full time. I have started now. I know that David has not so subtly hinted at this a few times.
Hey, what?
I started a blog called Legless in Glasgow. And for a while, I was writing a lot of content. But that was back when I was going out more and I was always on buses. And it gave me loads of good stories to write about. But now I'm kind of an old bastard and I stay home all the time, so I don't really have
that. Sounds like Jane CV. It's exactly the same thing.
I was looking at the blog and am I right in saying you've met royalty?
That is correct.
Prince Andrew in a Pizza Express and walking.
I was a plus one and I got to wear a fancy hat and that was nice. But when we arrived, we were told to go and sit at the wheelchair viewing platform. The Duke of Edinburgh just made a beeline for us. And I swear you could see their staff going, oh shit, he's gone for the disabled people. They were like trying to distract him with puppets just about. Everyone else had been told to rise. So he came over and the first thing he said was, ah, so you're the lucky ones that don't have to stand up. Hey. Which I thought was hilarious. Nobody else seemed to think it was that funny. And then he noticed that I had a power chair. He'd asked me how fast it could go. I just panicked and I just said, pretty fast, how? Do you want to race me? I don't know where it came from. And he just turned on his heels and walked away.
When you were talking about breaking your femur, and you put this in the blog, you said that you became kind of focused on the anniversary of that happening, but now you've changed and you don't do that now. What made you change your thinking to that?
I think probably just time. It was quite a traumatic experience. I make a lot of jokes about it and things, but it was, although I was aware that at some point I was going to need to use a wheelchair, it was very brutal and very abrupt. The orthopaedic surgeon the next day, in front of quite a lot of people, said, yes, well, I don't think you'll walk again. And that was it. And he walked away and that was how it was told to me, that was going to be the last time that I'd be able to stand. There was obviously a bit of grieving there, even if I wasn't really aware of it. The flat that I was in at the time, I couldn't access the kitchen or the bathroom in the wheelchair. By the time I'd moved to a flat that was much more suitable for me, that helped to start the healing process. I think it was just something that I was probably focusing on to say, oh, it's been 1 year since the last time I walked. But actually, I started focusing on other things. Well, it's now been 2 years that I've been able to get into my own kitchen and make myself a meal and starting to focus on the positives, the things that I could do once I'd started adapting life to suit me. Because I often say that you're not really disabled by anything other than your surroundings. So I think once I started to heal and go, right, this is how it's going to be now and I need to make my environment suitable for me, it makes it much easier to deal with. Your house set up in the ways that suit you, like you have your hair dryer next to the bed so you can blow your hair upside down before joining a podcast. So.
Shall I spin the spare wheel of despair?
Yes.
Okay, here we go.
Right, it's going to be Sydney.
Black Ops possibly.
It's going to be Sydney.
Hello, BBC.
It's Danone.
Danone.
Ooh, Dun-dun-dun-dun, a funny wee tune, I'm on and up, and I'm going to sit down.
Doon the water. That's what the Americans say. Where are you going? Doon the water.
Before we get into the wonderful and rich tapestry that is Dunoon, what is this where we're just picking a place? What is this about, Paul?
Well, we're going to visit Dunoon with a show we don't like to talk about.
Shut up.
It's called Still Gone, and it's myself, Mark and Jane regaling our experiences of our gold coins and our careers. We will be in Dunoon on Thursday the 18th of April 2021. So
whereabouts is it, Paul, in Dunoon?
Well, it's the Queen's Hall, Mark, in Dunoon.
That's the Queen's Hall.
Beautiful. Yeah.
No ghost. There's no ghost. I checked. All I need, where are we? If anybody's interested, the population of Dunoon is 4487.
Fantastic. It was the seat of the Lord High Stewards of Scotland. And after the sixth one, Robert came to the throne. It became the Royal Palace under the keepership of the Campbells.
The Lamonts and the Campbells, they did all the fighting down there.
Like the Clampets. Yeah, it's a clan with a history, the Campbells. Now, one of our lovely writers, it's not Daniel Defoe, he never bothered his arse going to Dunoon to write horrible things about it, but this is about the Campbells.
Oh.
In 1646, it was a scene of a cruel atrocity, Dunoon was, when the Campbells got the Lamonts of Cowell and Bute, 36 of whom were hanged on an ash tree at the kirkyard. And, insomuch that the Lord from heaven did declare his wrath and displeasure by striking the said tree immediately thereafter, there sprang out of the very heart of the root thereof a spring like unto blood, poppling up, and that for several years till the said murderers, or their favourers, did cause howk out the root.
Oh, we're a bad lot.
That's interesting, Dave, because my mother had a trumpet tree. And the council came round and rooted it out. It's in there!
He had that gag in McGregor's Treasure.
Dunoon was home to the very, very famous Scottish bookmaker, Harry Lauder.
Yeah.
Oh.
Scottish bookmaker.
Yeah, an entertainer. Fan-check.
Singer and comedian Sir Harry Lauder was not a bookmaker, but did work part-time at a flax mill in Arbroath, then spent 10 years as a miner in South Lanarkshire. He was the first British artist to sell over a million records, and in 1911 was the highest paid artist in the world.
Former Doctor Who, Sylvester McCoy was
yes.
born in Dunoon.
Yeah.
Emma Thompson was married there.
Eric Campbell, I was watching the snooker, and Jamie Rees-Clark, I thought, looked like the baddie in the Charlie Chaplin films. So I looked him up, and apparently there's a big argument. They're claiming he was born in Cheshire, but people say he was born in Dunoon. Eric Campbell, very, very famous in his time. His final year, 1917, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. On July 9th, his wife Fanny died of a heart attack at a restaurant near their house. His daughter Una was hit by a car walking to the store to buy a mourning dress for the funeral.
Oh no.
That's in July. In September, he met Pearl Gilman, a comedian with a reputation for marrying and immediately divorcing famous men. They got married 5 days later and she divorced him in November. He was chucked out of the house. He took a room in the athletic club. Remember, his wife died on the 9th of July. December 20th, he went to a party, drove home drunk and was killed in a car crash. He was cremated and his ashes remained in a cupboard until 1952.
Aww. That was like my Aunt Agnes and she was a Campbell.
Here's a question for you. Dunoon is twinned with...
What place?
Aileen, just to let you know, this is 99% made up. Right, carry okay. on, Mark.
Incredibly, Dunoon is twinned with Xanadu.
I'd heard that before, actually.
Yeah, it encompasses the remains of Kublai Khan's legendary capital city.
Of course, because the ELO song is Xanadu, twinned with Dunoon. Is that, yeah?
Twinned with Dunoon.
Yeah, much more sense.
Who can tell me about Castle Toward, MD?
I know loads of people went to Castle Toward.
Well, I don't know that, Jane, but what I can tell you is that that's where the children's TV series Raven was filmed.
Mr. McKenzie.
With James McKenzie. And they filmed series 1 to 7 there and then they moved somewhere else. Guess how many episodes they did?
192.
Oh.
240, I'm going to say.
Jane's closer. 290 episodes of Raven.
Wow.
Simon has got a question for Paul Riley. I think it's on the depth and strength and professionalism of your acting ability. Simon says, playing Winston, did you get into the mindset of accessibility issues, Paul, especially when Tam left you for dead when Osprey Heights was set for demolition?
The guys phoned me up and says, we're going to cut your leg off. And I went, right, okay. And so I did that thing, as I said to you before, the night before, I said, I better, you know, practice to fake that I've only got one leg. And I've met so many folk since, amputees, and I'm going to, Dave, tell you about this boy, Stephen Malloy, who came to the Hydro, 22 years of age, and he lost his leg in a wood chipper. Word got to me that, could you go and meet this boy? So I went to the Royal Infirmary, just had the operation, and he said to me, you smoked your leg off, didn't you? And I was like, aye, that's me. He was so full of drugs, the poor boy. So we brought him to the Hydro, we brought him backstage, and by this point he'd had his prosthetic leg fitted. Afterwards we went to the bar to meet him, and he took off his leg and he threw it at me.
he was very flippant about it.
Simon has a follow-up question. Aileen, what's the most inconsiderate thing you've come up against?
A teacher when I was at school. My PE teacher was a lovely woman. She was very understanding. She knew that I had a medical condition, so she would try and involve me with the things that I could do. But there was one day she was off and they sent a substitute teacher. So I went up and I pulled her aside and I explained to her I can't take part in class. And I think she just thought that I was being a chancer or that I'd forgotten my kit. So we went out to the football pitches. She'd sent me ahead. Well, since you didn't bother to bring your kit, you can go and set up. So I did that. It wasn't easy for me. And then when I got back down, she's like, so you can just run laps for the rest of the class around the field. So I tried to explain to her again. I was like, miss, I can't do that. So she said, well, if you can't run, you can just walk then. And she made me walk laps of the football field. I think if that had happened now, it would have been a very different story. But I just remember getting home and crying to my mum. But that was a teacher. That was somebody that was there to help me and look after me. It was horrible.
But any sort of teacher that knows anything, people can be wide. Of course they can. Obviously, if somebody goes and says, miss, I can't, I've got a sore leg. Mm-hmm. No, you haven't. Somebody goes and they give you a full description of the illness.
Of the medical diagnosis.
You would probably think to yourself, well, that's too much. They're not going to go into it.
Even if it is fake, it's elaborate enough that they merit getting let off just for the effort
For effort. I'm not trying to belittle what happened to you, Aileen, but let's talk about Mrs. McCann. I was probably talking too much, as was my thing. And I went, miss, can I go and change this book? And I stood up and she said to me, try and get through this. Sit down, you fat boy.
Oh, no.
That's shocking.
I was already at Glasgow School's Youth Theatre by that point, and I sat down, looked out the window, broken, and I pretended I told my mum and dad. I had to tell my mum and dad. I wasn't that bothered. But I kept it going, and every time she said, how are you, Martin? I would just ignore her. I left it 2 weeks. I said, would you be prepared to meet my mum and dad? So, as I say, it was terrible what happened to you, but what about me?
Did you ever receive counselling?
And later in life, I had to sit down with somebody and really kind of batter that out over a half-hour period. I felt much better after it.
You thought of getting a dog, Mark?
A dog? I need to get a dog to get me through that.
Aileen,
yes.
A question from Moss Flowers wants to ask Aileen, how easy was it for her to get her assistance dog?
Well, my experience was relatively straightforward. I think it must have been about 2013 that I applied to Canine Partners. And I think once I'd had the OT visits, I met a dog trainer who was working with a retired guide dog, and they did a wee assessment of how I interacted with a dog. Once I had been approved from that, I went onto the waiting list, and then it was just waiting to be matched with a dog. The dogs are all specifically trained for specific tasks that person needs, but they'll also take into account how old you are, how active your lifestyle is. So Zonda was a wee bit younger maybe than some of the other dogs. I think the process is quite similar now. They open up for new applications at set dates and times throughout the year. But if anybody is interested, the dates are on their websites, which I think is caninepartners.org.uk.
See when the application's approved, is it stamped with a paw?
Yes.
No,
yes.
But it should be.
There you go.
I'll email them and tell them that that's what they should do.
Absolutely.
to train these dogs as well. Of course, people they often think it's just a wee week to get the dog, and you know, but it takes a long time to train these dogs, doesn't it?
But I was under the impression, ignorantly so, that I would just turn up and be given this beautiful dog and a list of commands and then be sent on my merry way. But actually, that's not how it works. No. And I don't think I was prepared for how intense it is. I went down to the Midlands Centre and you live on site for 2 weeks. And on the first day, you get given your dog and then you're responsible for them and they sleep in your bedroom and you have to feed them and toilet them and get them into their routine. And I don't think I was prepared for it. It was lovely, but it is intense. It's 2 full-on weeks because it's not just up to the dog to learn the procedures and things. You need to learn the correct commands and you need to get used to walking with a dog attached to your wheelchair. It is quite intense, but it's so worth it. And it really was a very rewarding thing.
Would you like to hear a story about a toilet I couldn't get into?
Yes.
I was Jane Deere.
I love this story.
So a couple of years back, AC/DC were at Hampden, and I went to the toilet in the bowels of Hampden. There's about 50 portaloos, all just stacked up, and I'm queuing up and I'm busting, and I'm second from the front, right? And this guy turns around steaming drunk and he says, "Oh no, danger man, it's you, isn't it?" And I was like, I suppose it is me, aye. And he says, "Can I get my 40 with you?" And I went, "Aye, tell you what we'll do, right? You go and have your pee, then I'll have my pee, and then we'll do the 40 after that." And there's a pause, and he says, "Do you not want your 40 with me?" And I was like, "What? No." I says, "You have your pee, I'll have my pee, and then everything will be fine. You know, we can go." And then he gets right into my face and he goes, "I'm going to have a shite and I'm going to take ages." Climbs into the toilet, and then to be fair to him, I've been 10 minutes go by and the whole queue are going mental, right? What's going on? So then I have to turn around and tell the whole queue, and this woman at the back, she says, "Oh, is that right?" And she runs and she boots the toilet. It rocks back on its thing like that as it comes back. But of course, he thinks that's me, and he comes out and he points his finger right in my face. He says, "I'm going to blog about you."
Do you remember my mum, Aileen? Uh-huh. So now she's in her 90s, she's quite kind of muddled. And we use a wheelchair when we're out and about. We took her and her friend to the concert hall, maybe about 20 minutes before the show was about to start. I said, "Right, let's go to the toilet." So we had to wait in a wee queue. I take the wheelchair, so it's 2 accessible toilets. My mum gets up to walk a few steps. I'm behind the wheelchair and she walks into a broom cupboard, a cupboard in the middle of the 2 toilets. So I'm like, "Mum, I'm back to the door. That isn't the toilet." So, of course, the door locks. I can't open it from the outside. She can't open it from the inside. So now she's locked in the toilet. There's me. There's a tiny space. There's Mrs. Robertson up to high dough. I said, "You stand here. I'm going to go and get somebody that can open the door." I went and got somebody. They came back. They opened the broom cupboard door. We got her out. Mrs. Robertson said, "Oh, Jean, what happened? Oh, mad grad, didn't they know that was not the toilet?" So we go round in a big circle. She goes right back into the broom cupboard again. For this point, it's 25 past. The show's about to start in 5 minutes. The man's away. Mrs. R is now like about to, her blood pressure's through the roof because she can't stand being late for anything. So we'd go and get the man again, get my mum out, get them both back in, take them down. By this point, the show's now started. It's 7:40. I have to take my mum in the wheelchair down the front in the concert hall, Mrs. R behind me, Aileen, who's waiting on me. She phones me. I haven't switched my phone off because I wasn't going to the show. So right at the very front of the audience, my phone starts ringing. Everybody's tutting. I leave. I'm literally 10 minutes out of the place when Mrs. R, who we didn't know this, had bought, while my mum was in the toilet, a full bag of Maltesers, and she's diabetic, had eaten the full bag, then takes unwell, and we had to get another call to say to come in and take the pair of them back out.
Aileen. Boys in Green, who's a regular questioner, says, "My partner has Crohn's disease and often gets, let's say, attitude from members of the public for using a disabled toilet. She has a radar key and a lot of the time needs to use the closest facilities. Do you think there's enough education out there about hidden disabilities?" I know you've got many stories on this subject. Mm-hmm. I personally am very keen to hear one about, and let's not name any names, Parklands Hotel and Country Club on Ayr Road in Glasgow.
Yes, I think it's getting better. I think we've still got quite a long way to go. I've had a couple of those things. Obviously, before I started using the wheelchair, when I was still walking, something that was always more an issue for me was blue badge parking spaces. There was that one, David, that you were referring to when I was visiting with a friend and we parked in a disabled bay and I put out my badge and somebody from the establishment had just taken it upon themselves to yell across the packed beer garden, "You're not disabled." And I was trying to yell back, "Yes, I am." And then, of course, you're sitting trying to have a drink or something in the beer garden and you feel like everybody's watching you. And I think somebody had actually even come up and said, like, "So how are you disabled? Like, what's wrong with you?" So it's just, I think a lot of the time people think they're doing a good thing, but actually just be kind. It doesn't matter at the end of the day.
Paul, are you at the ready?
Uh-huh.
S.M. Cooper, who's in Seattle, Washington.
G'day, Seattle.
Right, for the three Eastall gamers, what was your favourite episode of the show?
I liked the 70s one because we dressed up, because that was my main thing in life about dressing up, and then we dressed up in the 70s for the New Year special.
Oh, the Hugmanay one.
Aye, the lift, that was great. One in a lift.
I think that answers S.M. Cooper's question really admirably. We all like the same episode. One in a lift. I throw this over to Aileen Duncan. In a lift, Aileen.
Well, there was the time I'd gone into town and I was passing New Look, the one on Buchanan Street, and thought I'll pop in there, and I decided to use the lift, went down to the basement to look at the shoes and got back into the lift, and I drove into kind of straight ahead. Now I've learned that I always reverse into lift so that I'm facing the doors, and I pressed the button and it did start to move, but then it stopped. A wee voice came on saying out of order. So I pressed the alarm button, which made a dial-up noise, and then said, "This number has not been recognised." So I thought, right, I'll phone. I didn't have any signal. I was using my chair at one point to try and batter the doors, but the music in the store was so loud that even though there was people outside the lift, they couldn't hear me. An hour went past and I was still stuck in this lift. I really started to panic. And then one wee bar of signal appeared and I got straight on the phone, phoned my brother, and he tries to phone the shop and nobody picks up. He actually phoned the Buchanan Galleries and got through to security, explained the situation, and they were like, "No, that's not part of the Buchanan Galleries." "No, I understand, but could you go down and alert somebody that there's someone stuck in the lift?" "No, we can't do that. It's not part of Buchanan Galleries." He phoned the police and they said, "Well, we'll just need to send out a fire appliance." So after an hour and a half of me being stuck in this lift, they arrived. There should have been a crank, but the crank had been removed. The guy was like, "Hold on." He started shouting down to one of the other firemen, "How is she going to get out of the shop?"
So Just leave her, Tom.
It's fine. Close the doors. So eventually four guys got in the lift with me, and they all took a limb, lifted me out. I was quite upset about it, and I was annoyed with New Look because it was a chain of events. It's fine for a lift to break down, but if the alarm's not working and the crank's been removed and you can't get any signal and the music's too loud, there was all of these things that just made it so much worse. I got home and I thought, I can't be scared of this. I need to go out, get in a lift and make myself feel better about it because I need to use lifts. It's part of my life. So the next day I went to IKEA and the lift broke down.
Wardrobe, everybody.
No, they did. They sent me a bunch of flowers.
But so you had to put them together yourself, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Aileen, Moss Flowers has a follow-up to the assistant's dog, Zonda, question. Everyone's got follow-up questions just now. It's like the White House press briefing without the idiot for the care home. Would you recommend it? How are things with Zonda?
Zonda is my chocolate Labrador, and he is an assistance dog. The things that Zonda does for me, he can pick things up if I drop them on the ground. He can help me off with my jacket. He opens and closes doors for me. He can load and unload the washing machine. He's just incredible. When the postman comes in the morning, he runs up to the postbox and gets my mail and brings it to me. They're trained in doing a lot of practical tasks, and each dog is specifically trained to match their human companion, their partner's needs. But it's so much more than that. They are support dogs as well. It's just every time you start to feel a bit sad, he's there, or any time that you're you know, having a bit of a hard time, he's there to make it all better, and he's constantly by my side. There's quite a few rules in place which are quite difficult for people to understand. Nobody else is really meant to distract him, and it's meant to be about solidifying your bond together. So you can imagine that's quite difficult when you bring this beautiful dog home, trying to explain to them, sorry, can you not play with the dog? It is really difficult. Don't look at the beautiful dog. He's my beautiful dog. But now that we are a few years down the line, our bond is so solid that actually it does all make perfect sense. I've had him home now for 5 or 6 years, I think. And sometimes I'm still surprised that he seems to know me better than I know myself. I can't say how incredible these dogs are. And I think if there's anybody out there listening who has a disability, or even if it's not a disability, there's loads of different kinds of dogs out there. There's guide dogs and hearing dogs and support dogs. And you can even get seizure alert dogs.
I get contacted by dementia dogs, and I didn't know that. Oh, this is the one that I didn't know anything about.
When you talk about disabilities now, and there's always mental health and such like, you get an assistance dog for someone who's intrinsically lazy as well.
I'm listening to that, what Zonda can do. My stepdaughter couldn't do half of that for me.
No.
Pick things up, open doors,
do the washing.
It's amazing what they'll do for a biscuit.
Jim McCarry's the same.
That bee that was in the conservatory, I don't know where it is. This happened yesterday as well.
Is that an assistance bee? Does it help you?
That's right.
Does it wear a wee jacket?
That's Davy cutting his grass. Do you want me to shut my windows?
Yes, please.
Oh no, here we go. Is that this week's mystery noise, Dave?
Interesting enough, we've had absolutely no response to that whatsoever, so that's good. That was very popular.
Yeah,
is it
Jane
McCarry eating chocolate gold coins from a treasure chest?
Close, but no cigar.
Let's just do that while we're here.
Then that noise. Who could it be? What could it be? Then that noise. Sagging super spines on a horse on skis. Then that noise. Will it do you work that's running up the mountain?
For those of you who were listening last week to Name That Noise and showed no interest whatsoever, Mr. Riley, can you tell us?
The noise was my French bulldog Dweezil eating his first prawn cracker.
There we are. And obviously, if people had been precise with that, there would have been a holiday to Lagos.
Lagos.
Or a signed framed fanny.
Well, that's not a present, that's a piece by curse.
The threat.
It wasn't me.
I think we've run out of words, folks.
Yep, that's us, I think.
Can we have a massive thank you to Eowyn Duncan?
Yes!
Thank you very much for having me on. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, folks, that is us for this week. 3 Down 1 Across. Follow us on Twitter and remember, subscribe if you're enjoying yourself. And if you're not enjoying yourself, subscribe anyway. You just do have to listen to it. Thank you very much to Eowyn Duncan, and we shall catch you all next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
3 Down 1 Across is an Osprey production. This episode was moderated by the Scottish Qualifications Authority and consequently has been unfairly and incompetently downgraded. It was produced at Soundsmooth Facilities.